Hello, welcome to Bare Naked Politics. This is the absolute farce of a podcast where I pretend like it's even close to humanly possible to keep up with politics and news in the United Kingdom. It is not possible, and every time I do an episode, we have a different Prime Minister. Or something so dramatic has happened that I couldn't have possibly predicted that it all becomes irrelevant and I have to do another episode. So here we are again, folks, 7 weeks since the last new Prime Minister podcast, and we're going in for another one. I cannot express to you just how unusual this is. I know that they're saying like, oh, just get comfortable in the chaos because this is, you know, this is politics today. It's never been like this, for God's sake. In under 2 months, we've had three prime ministers in the United Kingdom: Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, and now Rishi Sunak. In this episode, I'm going to get you completely up to date with, I mean, as far as I possibly can, to how we got here. So, like, why did Liz Truss? She was there, then she was gone. Now you see it, now you don't. Blink of an eye, goodbye. And then how come Rishi Sunak was able to just swan in so quickly? Because, of course, the custom for him to come in was different to how Liz Truss got in. It was much more swift and abrupt, and it involved far fewer people. So I'll explain all of that and just what we can expect next. After you listen to this episode, you will be up to date and it will all make perfect sense. That I can say. Whether all of it will be completely irrelevant in a week again is another question, probably, at this, you know, looking at the current state of things. But let's at least get you across everything that's happened over the last week or so and what position we're in now. I've forgotten to introduce myself. My name's Julia Bell, the last name you need to remember considering all the rotating names of politicians that you need to be bearing in mind. Before I get into it, do make sure that you're subscribed to the podcast. I know that the upload schedule's chaotic. I have a very intensive full-time job that I'm trying to sort of balance with this, but I'm pretty keen on the idea of getting at least one episode every 2 weeks that's really all-encompassing and gets you feeling nice and comfortable with what's happening. I know that for some of you that's actually kind of perfect because you don't want to be thinking about politics all day every day. I do get that as well. So it's worth subscribing so you never miss an episode. Make sure you're following the Instagram account at Bare Naked Politics. That keeps you updated in the interim. And without further ado, let's try to do this. Okay, so Rishi Sunak is the new Prime Minister. I think that bit you're probably across, but let's get this started with just explaining what happened to Liz Truss. She has this kind of unwelcome record of being the shortest ever serving Prime Minister in British history. She was in office for 49 days. And almost 2 weeks of that, bear this in mind, was during this national period of mourning, remember, after the Queen's passing. So that kind of run of normal business in government wasn't happening at that time. So really, in terms of just having a proper tenure, it was like 5 weeks. It's honestly unheard of. My producer Hannah, she's so good, she's put a note on alongside the structure of the episode today, and she's put, Liz Truss took the record for the shortest serving prime minister from a prime minister called George Canning. He was prime minister for 119 days, which is still significantly more than 49. He was prime minister for 119 days back in 1827, and his tenure ended because he died, he passed away. So that was the previous record, but now Liz Truss has it with 49 days in office. But still, you cannot deny that somewhat of an impact was made in that time. It's arguable as to whether that was positive or negative, but there was definitely a series of impacts. In the last episode, I went into a lot of detail with friend of the podcast, John Hatfield, about this mini budget that was launched by Kwasi Kwarteng, who was the Chancellor at the time, not anymore. But in that episode, I talked about, you know, Liz Truss's government's impact on the economy. It was massive. And even neutral bodies like the Office for Budget Responsibility and the Bank of England were stepping forward and saying, we're not happy. Alarm bells, alarm bells. So it was a really kind of deep dive into that. That episode is still relevant because if you don't understand why Liz Truss's tenure was so controversial, that will definitely explain a huge chunk of it. But at that time, Liz Truss was kind of desperately aiming to convince everyone that she had a hold on the economy. Yes, this is rocky, but this is a good idea. Bear with us. That was the messaging. But however hard she and Kwasi Kwarteng tried to convince everybody, it didn't matter. The noise just wasn't quieting down. The outrage and, you know, the rebellion, really, about their plans for the economy just weren't, you know, weren't dying down. And so on the 14th of October, after this big farce around Kwasi Kwarteng's mini budget, quote unquote mini budget, he got sacked and he was replaced by Jeremy Hunt. That was kind of significant because Hunt had been a backer of Sunak in the leadership race when it was Liz Truss versus Rishi Sunak. Hunt had very openly said, no, I'm on Sunak's side. And until that point, actually, all the key cabinet positions that Liz Truss had doled out, she'd given to, I mean, really, like, for lack of a better phrase, her pals. She'd given to people who had been loyal to her. So for her to put Hunt in that position, who was, like, quite clearly not in her camp, it was significant. It was her, I guess, trying to say, like, look, I'm willing to balance this and not just go down my own echo chamber route. But straight away, Hunt went, right, you're going to put me in this position? Cool. I'm going to undo almost everything that Kwasi Kwarteng tried to do. Let's have a quick listen.
Firstly, we will reverse almost all the tax measures announced in the growth plan 3 weeks ago that have not started parliamentary legislation. Secondly, the government's current plan is to cut the basic rate of income tax to 19%, but at a time when markets are rightly demanding commitment to sustainable public finances, it is not right to borrow to fund this tax cut. So I've decided that the basic rate of income tax will remain at 20%, and it will do so indefinitely until economic circumstances allow for it to be cut.
So there you go, that's Jeremy Hunt's voice. And he really had no qualms about being very open about the fact that he was just undoing a lot of what Kwasi Kwarteng wanted to do. He said he was going to undo the tax measures, or most of them. That was, by and large, the mini budget that Kwasi Kwarteng did. It was all these changes to taxes. So Jeremy Hunt went in and said, yeah, all those tax things, yeah, let's not do those. And that did start a conversation about who is in charge now. You know, Liz Truss was elected by the Conservative Party members on the promise of cutting taxes, which now Jeremy Hunt had come in and said, actually, we're not going to do that. And it was like, well, what's the, you know, where's your authority then, Liz Truss? What, who's in charge? And that noise wasn't just coming from the opposition, you know, Labour and the SNP. It was MPs in Liz Truss's own party, the Conservative Party, who were getting angry. They were feeling confused, perhaps a bit displaced. And then things just kind of came to like a big climax, like a real head, when they had this vote on whether we should overturn the fracking ban in England. So that's a ban that had been included in the 2019 manifesto. Let's ban fracking. And then Liz Truss came in and said, I'm actually going to lift that ban. I think we should carry on fracking. And Tory MPs were told, so all the people in her party were told, right, you have to vote in line with what Liz Truss wants. You have to vote to lift this fracking ban. Otherwise, you will no longer be able to count yourselves in our party. You will lose the whip, is what the term for that is. So that is really extreme. You'd have to sit as an independent if you don't go with us on this. But then at the last minute, they were told, actually, don't worry about that. That's not the case anymore. So you won't, you know, run the risk of losing the whip if you vote against this. It was just, well, I mean, does that sound like chaos to you? Because it does to me. It would be very confusing and stressful as a Conservative MP to know where you stand. Have a listen to this. This is pretty reflective of the mood amongst lots of Conservative MPs at the time when there was sort of all this flip-flopping going on under Liz Truss. His name is Charles Walker, and this is what he was saying to reporters in Parliament straight after that fracking vote.
This is an absolute disgrace. As a Tory MP of 17 years, who's never been a minister, who's got on with it loyally most of the time, I think it's a shambles and a disgrace. I think it is utterly appalling.
So you seem quietly...
I'm livid. And, you know, I really shouldn't say this, but I hope all those people that put Liz Truss in number 10. I hope it was worth it. I hope it was worth it for the ministerial red box. I hope it was worth it to sit round the cabinet table, because the damage they have done to our party is extraordinary.
All right, Conservative MP Charles Walker there. And you know that if one of your own MPs calls your government's approach a quote-unquote disgrace, then you're in trouble. And the next day, so just a week after Liz Truss had sacked Kwasi Kwarteng, or after he'd had to step down, Liz Truss herself resigned. And, I mean, after the economy stuff and after all these calls for her to resign, even though it was so quick, it wasn't a humongous shock. I mean, it was such a bumpy, though short, tenure. She made this incredibly short speech to match her incredibly short tenure, I suppose. So we might as well listen to it in full. This is what she said.
I came into office at a time of great economic and international instability. Families and businesses were worried about how to pay their bills. Putin's illegal war in Ukraine threatens the security of our whole continent, and our country has been held back for too long by low economic growth. I was elected by the Conservative Party with a mandate to change this. We delivered on energy bills and on cutting national insurance. And we set out a vision for a low-tax, high-growth economy that would take advantage of the freedoms of Brexit. I recognise, though, given the situation, I cannot deliver the mandate on which I was elected by the Conservative Party. I have therefore spoken to His Majesty the King to notify him that I am resigning as leader of the Conservative Party. This morning I met the chairman of the 1922 committee, Sir Graham Brady. We've agreed that there will be a leadership election to be completed within the next week. This will ensure that we remain on a path to deliver our fiscal plans and maintain our country's economic stability and national security. I will remain as Prime Minister until a successor has been chosen. Thank you.
Okay, Liz Truss there in her very brief statement. And I think it's fair to say it was a speech without contrition. There was no apology. She didn't say the word sorry. Despite the chaos, really, that Kwasi Kwarteng's mini budget impacted on the economy. It was greenlit by her, and she didn't apologise for it, even though, you know, the Bank of England had to wade in, the Office for Budget Responsibility condemned it. She still didn't say, okay, look, we got that wrong. She just sort of matter-of-factly said she was unable to continue with the programme that she was voted in on, and that's it. Goodbye. So that brings us to this very quick timeline, to be honest, where Liz Truss was out and Rishi Sunak was in. And you probably clocked that it was a way quicker timeline to replace Liz Truss than it was back when Boris Johnson resigned. That was like a whole summer. But Boris Johnson resigned on the 7th of July, and it was almost 2 months before we knew that Liz Truss would be taking over as Prime Minister. We went through this series of MPs voting for different rounds and people dropping out and being voted out and the kind of eliminations getting smaller and smaller. Then when it got to the final two, which was Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak, they did this whole summer of like local campaigning and hustings for Conservative Party members trying to get them on side, because obviously it was just a vote within Conservative Party members to vote for their new leader. This time, it was all done within a week. Once Liz Truss was gone, boomf, Sunak's in. And I think it was largely to do with the fact that they thought, God, we can't keep putting the public through this. There's so much uncertainty. We need to just make this swift and decisive. I think that was the kind of Conservative Party approach. And so the way they did that, the way they made sure that it was a very quick process, was they upped the threshold of nominations that a candidate needed to get themselves on the ballot paper. So the 1922 committee that kind of really runs the show when it comes to how they select a leader and how that process works, they said, look, let's have it that anyone that wants to run to replace Liz Truss needs 100 nominations or more. That's a lot, considering there's only actually, I say only, they've got a huge majority, but there's 357 Conservative MPs in total. So if you need 100 backers, then the maximum amount of people you could have in the running is three, right? Because they each would need over 100 people. So that already meant that they kind of eliminated loads of the stages to get through to a leader, and it would, you know, they would end up at the final round straight away. At that point, you know, when that process had been decided, there was actually only two candidates who officially put their hat in the ring and, like, who backed themselves to get that level of nominations, I guess. Rishi Sunak being one, obviously, and the other one was Penny Mordaunt. And neither of those were particularly surprising that they stepped forward. I think my dad, I remember, was saying, like, I'm quite surprised Rishi Sunak is doing this because Liz Truss has left, he termed it a poison chalice. It's like, how can anyone really recover from this, because it's been so bad and the Conservatives have plummeted so much in the polls? Why would anybody want to take this on? So I think some people were surprised that Rishi Sunak stepped forward, because he could have sort of sat back and said, see, you should have voted for me back when you had the option, and now I'm not going to bother, middle finger kind of thing. But he didn't. He stepped forward and put his hat in the ring, as well as Penny Mordaunt, like I say. And they are actually the two people that came below Liz Truss in the previous contest. They'd come second, Rishi Sunak had come second, and Penny Mordaunt had come third. So that was who we were kind of dealing with, and then there was rumours that Boris Johnson was going to run as well. And it wasn't just him taking it upon himself. There were loud public calls for Boris Johnson to put himself forward. He was on holiday in the Caribbean at the time that this was all happening. And he was photographed on a plane home. And it was like, oh, is he coming back from his holiday early to get back to the UK to kind of consider whether he should, you know, head back to Downing Street and take over again? He claimed that he had more than enough backers, so more than 100 nominations. And there really was potential that he was going to run. He had some serious backers, including the former Home Secretary. This blew my mind. The former Home Secretary, Priti Patel. She tweeted, quote, I'm backing Boris Johnson to return as our Prime Minister, to bring together a united team, to deliver our manifesto, and to lead Britain to a stronger and more prosperous future. That was Priti Patel. I hasten to add, the same Priti Patel who directly called on Boris Johnson to resign as PM a matter of months ago. She said, you need to go. And then a couple of months later, she's like, oh, do you know who we need? Boris Johnson. What is British politics? Can someone explain it to me? Can someone do a podcast where they explain to me what politics is? And then I will do this podcast and explain to you what politics is, because I've literally lost the plot. Anyway, Boris Johnson didn't run, spoiler alert, on Sunday. So what's that? Sunday the 23rd of October. Boris Johnson published a letter, an open letter, to say he would not be running. I would read the whole letter out because it's really something. He kind of infamously used the word I 26 or 27 times, and he didn't massively focus on the good of the country. That as a concept didn't feature as prominently as sort of talking about himself. But the quote here is, I'll read you some of this letter. Quote, I believe I am well placed to deliver a Conservative victory in 2024. And tonight I can confirm that I have cleared the very high hurdle of 102 nominations, including a proposer and a seconder. And I could put my nomination in tomorrow. There's a very good chance that I would be successful in an election with the Conservative Party members, and that I could indeed be back in Downing Street by Friday. But in the course of the last days, I've sadly come to the conclusion that this would simply not be the right thing to do. You can't govern effectively unless you have a united party in Parliament. And then later on in the letter, I remember he said, but I'm not quoting it directly now, I'm paraphrasing because I can't remember, but it said something like, I still have a lot to offer, but this is simply not the right time. So this kind of idea of, like, I still have more to give and now's not the right time, it implies that he's not intending to go away forever. Like, I'll be back is what I got from the end of that letter, but you can see what you think. Anyway, that left Rishi Sunak and Penny Mordaunt as the two that had publicly said, right, okay, I'll give this a go. There was a sort of deadline that was set. By 2 p.m. on Monday the 24th of October, you need to have those 100 backers in order to run. So by 2, that's your deadline. And at 1:57 p.m, 3 minutes before the deadline, Mordaunt withdrew, saying her reasoning was that the country and the party needed certainty. There's debate about, like, did you withdraw because you wouldn't have managed to make that threshold and this is easier, or did you withdraw because, you know, you had unity at heart? That's kind of open within a conversation. But I think, again, the speed of the timeline, there only actually being one person in the running at all. By the time it got to that deadline, there was only one man standing to run. So it was just a default win. It's an indication that the Conservative Party saw all this chaos and thought, we need to just be swift, be decisive, get somebody in there, and then crack on with governing, for God's sake. So that's what Rishi Sunak kind of focused on, really, when he made his first speech as leader of the Conservative Party. Bear in mind, he was not Prime Minister yet. He had been voted in as leader of the Conservative Party by default because no one else ran against him. He still needed to wait to speak to the King and get his green light to become the Prime Minister and form a new government. But anyway, this is his first speech as leader of the Conservative Party, straight off the back of sort of winning this very quick race by default.
The United Kingdom is a great country, but there is no doubt we face a profound economic challenge. We now need stability and unity, and I will make it my utmost priority to bring our party and our country together, because that is the only way we will overcome the challenges we face and build a better, more prosperous future for our children and our grandchildren.
So there you go, Rishi Sunak in his first speech as leader of the Conservative Party. And like you heard, this theme of unity is really important. In fact, in his first address to Tory MPs as their leader, directly talking to them, he told them it's time to, quote, unite or die, saying, you know, this is absolutely key to us surviving as a party and us surviving in power. OK, like I said, at that stage, he wasn't Prime Minister. He needed to go speak to the King now, King Charles. So that was a bit of a process. King Charles had to race back to London from Sandringham on Tuesday, the 25th of October, to sort of formally ask Rishi Sunak to form a new government and officially become PM. Obviously, Rishi Sunak dutifully accepted. And regardless of your politics, and actually, I'm cross with myself that I haven't mentioned this yet, and I'm like good halfway through the podcast. This is a big deal. We have the first ever British Asian Prime Minister ever of all time in the UK. That is a humongous landmark. It's the first person of colour ever to hold the role. I know person of colour really gripes some of you. I don't, like, what's the best way to word that? But I mean, that's the way that the kind of the accepted way that the news outlets are terming it. The first person of colour to hold that role. And another kind of first, at least for a long time. He's really young. He's 42 years old, Rishi Sunak is. So that's the youngest Prime Minister we'll have had in over 200 years. And I mean, if you think about it, like, some of my best pals are in their early and mid-40s. And with the greatest respect, if any of you guys are listening to this now, imagining you as Prime Minister is a bit mental. So it is kind of fun to think, wow, like, he was only recently in his 30s and now he is. And like when he went into politics, he was in his mid-30s. And now he's Prime Minister. So yeah, breaking a couple of records there. Okay, I'm definitely going to get into what we can expect from Rishi Sunak and his new government. What will his big focuses be? How will they differ from Liz Truss, short though her tenure was? But before I do that, I want to give you an idea of some reactions to, you know, this whole process. The fact that Sunak is now suddenly our Prime Minister, blink and you have a new Prime Minister. I want to kind of talk you through the good and the bad reactions. I think the biggest criticism that Rishi Sunak faces is that he's just not legitimate. He shouldn't be Prime Minister. He doesn't have a quote-unquote mandate. Now, technically he does. During elections in the UK, it's not a president. We don't vote for a person. We vote for a party. We vote for an MP to represent us in the House of Parliament within a party. And whoever is the leader of the biggest party, I'm patronising you now, but you know the drill. Whoever's the leader of the biggest party by default becomes prime minister. It's much more about party than it is about person. But sort of processes and bureaucracy aside, the truth of the matter is plenty of people, if you talk to them about why they voted in 2019, will say Boris Johnson's name. They'll say Boris Johnson's name. They'll argue that he played a part and his role as leader played a part in who they chose. I'm not saying it was everyone's point of view. I'm not even saying it was a majority point of view, but it was a component. And so critics are saying, we're so past that point now. It's been such a long time and there's been two different leaders in between. You shouldn't just be passing the buck along different Conservative Party members. We should give this choice back to the public. They should get to have their say. And actually, what is a process isn't relevant when leaders these days are so powerful and they do have so much say, particularly on an international stage. Let's hear from a particular critic, Angela Rayner, deputy leader of the Labour Party. This is what she had to say about the legitimacy of Rishi Sunak as Prime Minister.
Labour thinks that we should be having a general election. I think everybody who I've spoken to, the public, have said we should be having a general election. There is no mandate now. The Conservatives have completely broken their promises, broke our economy, and they can't just keep doling out Prime Ministers every month because they're in total chaos and they've lost control of the market and haven't got any ideas of how they're going to tackle the cost of living that people are facing.
Okay, so that was Angela Rayner, deputy leader of the Labour Party. Obviously, she's not pleased about Rishi Sunak kind of becoming prime minister all of a sudden. But that call for a general election is not just coming from within opposition parties. In fact, even some Conservative Party members and MPs are saying it's time for an election. Nadine Dorries, for example, big ally of Boris Johnson, said that if, Boris Johnson had a mandate, he was legitimate, but if anyone else became PM, it would be quote unquote impossible to avoid a general election. So it's clear on Sunak's mind when he stepped in that this was going to be a battle that he would have to face, not just from opposition, but even from people within the Conservatives. So let's hear him address that pretty much straight away when he stood outside Downing Street.
I will always be grateful to Boris Johnson for his incredible achievements as Prime Minister. And I treasure his warmth and generosity of spirit. And I know he would agree that the mandate my party earned in 2019 is not the sole property of any one individual. It is a mandate that belongs to and unites all of us. And the heart of that mandate is our manifesto. I will deliver on its promise. A stronger NHS, better schools, safer streets, control of our borders, protecting our environment, supporting our armed forces, levelling up and building an economy that embraces the opportunities of Brexit, where businesses invest, innovate, and create jobs.
So there you go, Sunak kind of doubling down on this idea that it's the party that you voted for, it's the manifesto that you voted for, I'm a representative to make that happen, you didn't vote for the person, and that's why I'm absolutely fair enough to be standing here in front of you now. And even though I'm sort of saying, look, not everyone buys the fact that we've got yet another Conservative Prime Minister who was not elected directly by the public. And actually, he was, because it all came down to Conservative MPs, he was elected by such a slither of the population, 0.00 something percent, really not representative of the full public. But even so, his popularity in the polls is leaps and bounds higher than that of Liz Truss, who, again, was not voted in by the general public, but she was voted in by more people since it was open to members of the public who were Conservative Party members. That was a membership vote. So even though he was voted in by less people, he is ahead of her in the polls. YouGov did some polling just before they each became prime minister. For Liz Truss, 30%, just 30% thought that she would be a good or an average prime minister. Whereas for Rishi Sunak, that number was 51%. So actually more than half of the people that they polled thought he would be good or average. And then potentially, this is the most important bit, the kind of unpopular side of things, 52% of those polled by YouGov thought that Liz Truss would be poor or terrible as PM, 52%. But then when it came to Sunak, this is still a high number, but 29% thought he would be poor or terrible. So the differences in, you know, public opinion for each of the politicians is really stark. We're talking about things that Sunak is kind of having to battle with, challenges that he's going to face. And one key one we can't avoid talking about is his family, actually. It's an area where he's going to definitely come under pressure. You might remember a podcast episode I did earlier this year when Rishi Sunak's wife was in the spotlight, big time, over her tax affairs. I looked it up before. The episode is called "Why is Rishi Sunak so unpopular now?" It's a really harsh title, but it was absolutely kind of relevant at the time. He was plummeting in the polls. Essentially, the problem around his family that he faced and probably still will is that his wife is of uber wealthy stock. Like, I'm talking billionaires rather than millionaires. Her dad founded a company called Infosys, which is one of the biggest IT giants in the world. It's an Indian tech company. And Rishi Sunak as well, himself, pre-politics, was extremely successful in the world of finance. So together, their kind of joint fortune puts them higher on the UK rich list than the king. Like, and not just a bit higher, a lot higher. So they're stonkingly loaded, to put it bluntly. And bear that in mind with the fact that we're in the context of extremely severe economic trouble as a country at the moment. Rishi Sunak termed it a profound economic crisis, was the way that he worded it. And so we've got this sort of real cost of living crisis that for many people is so terrifying. And they're debating, like, can I afford a hot meal tonight? Can I put the heating on now that the weather's getting colder? Can I, you know, drive to work? Or is my car just totally out of commission because I can't afford petrol? All of these things are going to be quite stark in contrast to the lifestyle that our Prime Minister can afford to live should he want to. Now, will that trip him up if he has to come appeal to the public and say, look, we're facing a cost of living crisis, tough decisions are going to need to be made that are going to hurt you personally for a while? Are you basically going to be getting people going, pardon the pun, but that's a bit rich coming from you? So I think that that is something that we'll have to sort of look out for. And especially bearing in mind, his focus has been the economy. That was like the first thing he had to say as soon as he stepped in and addressed the public. Let's listen to another bit of that first speech that he made as Prime Minister.
Our country is facing a profound economic crisis. I want to pay tribute to my predecessor, Liz Truss. She was not wrong to want to improve growth in this country. It is a noble aim, but some mistakes were made. And I have been elected as leader of my party and your Prime Minister, in part, to fix them.
So you can hear there from Rishi Sunak's very kind of serious tone, it mirrors actually a lot of the language that he had during the last leadership campaign when he was running against Liz Truss to take over from Boris Johnson. Obviously, he lost that. But Liz Truss was sort of saying, look, I want to come in, I want to cut taxes, I want to allow for people to be independent and for people to grow and for companies to flourish. And Rishi Sunak was saying, that is all codswallop. That is what he called economic fairy tales. So he's actually sticking to that now that he's Prime Minister. And I'm just interested to see how it will play out. Like, will the fact that he is incredibly personally wealthy, will it undermine his ability to be tough on us? Or, to be fair, one of my very, very close friends was talking about how, why wouldn't we want someone really wealthy in a role where they have to be authoritative with the economy? I don't know. I don't know if that necessarily connects, but I'm interested to hear your views. By the way, you can always message us at Bare Naked Politics on Instagram. Do you have more confidence in Rishi Sunak because he's personally wealthy, or is it completely irrelevant to you, or does it annoy you that, like, he might have to make tough calls and he's rich? I'd love to know. Okay, ranted loads about money there, kind of went off the little plan that me and my producer Hannah made for this episode. So back on track, I'm here to talk about what we can expect from Rishi Sunak. So let's talk about his cabinet. These are the people that are going to be making key decisions, running entire departments and budgets on each of their given kind of domains. One important person to mention, just while I'm tailing off this rant about money, Jeremy Hunt. He was the Chancellor under Liz Truss just for a matter of days, really, as after he took over from Kwasi Kwarteng, but before she stepped down. He has kept his job. Rishi Sunak said, actually, you can stay put, Mr. Hunt. I think we should do this together. And he is carrying on these reversals, if you will, of everything that Kwasi Kwarteng did. So all these rollbacks that Jeremy Hunt announced before, we're sticking to that plan. And we can actually expect another sort of budget type of announcement in mid-November with a few more details about what Jeremy Hunt plans to do about what are going to be quite turbulent economic times. So that is one very key cabinet position that we've got a bit of an idea of what we can expect. Beyond that, let's talk you through who the hell are we dealing with? What have we got on our hands? Suella Braverman, let's talk about her. She is coming back as Home Secretary. She had been Home Secretary under Liz Truss, but she had very controversially just had to step down. She had to quit or be fired or however you want to word it, because she said, look, I've broken the ministerial code by sending sensitive information from her personal device. So like seriously breaking essentially security parameters within her role as Home Secretary. So Suella Braverman had to go. And now she's back. Now Rishi Sunak has said, actually, the job that you just gave up a matter of days ago, let's put you back in it and see how you fare as Home Secretary. And yeah, Suella Braverman's appointment back as Home Secretary has particularly ruffled the Labour Party's feathers. That has been a big focus for their, like, disdain, I guess. I think actually it was the very first thing that Keir Starmer brought up, the leader of the Labour Party. I think it was the first thing that he brought up when he went toe-to-toe with Rishi Sunak for the first time as leaders in the House of Commons. Why don't I play you that exchange, actually? I think it's always interesting to get a sense of, like, these are the two most iconic positions in British politics, the leader of the opposition and the Prime Minister. And it's always just nice to hear their initial exchange as one enters anew. So Keir Starmer sort of says, like, welcome, good to have you. Now let's get down to business. I'm cross. And then they talk about Suella Braverman. Let me play you it.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and may I welcome the Prime Minister. The first British Asian Prime Minister is a significant moment in our national story. And it's a reminder that for all the challenges we face as a country, Britain is a place where people of all races and all beliefs can fulfil their dreams. Was his Home Secretary right to resign last week for a breach of security?
Prime Minister!
Well, Mr. Speaker, can I thank the Honourable Gentleman for his kind and indeed generous welcome to the dispatch box. I look forward to Prime Minister's question time with him, and I know that we will have, no doubt, robust exchanges, but I hope that they can also be serious and grown up. So I look forward to that. Well, he asked about the Home Secretary. The Home Secretary made an error of judgment, but she recognised that. She raised the matter and she accepted her mistake. And that's why I was delighted to welcome back into a united cabinet that brings experience and stability to the heart of government. And let me tell you, Mr. Speaker, what the Home Secretary will be focused on. She'll be focused on cracking down on criminals, on defending our borders, while the party opposite remains soft on crime and in favour of unlimited immigration.
Yesterday, the Prime Minister stood on the steps of Downing Street and promised integrity, professionalism, exactly, and accountability. But then, with his first act, he appointed a Home Secretary who was sacked by his predecessor a week ago for deliberately pinging around sensitive Home Office documents from her personal account. Far from soft on crime, I ran the Crown Prosecution Service for 5 years. So, have officials raised concerns about his decision to appoint her?
Yeah. Mr. Speaker, I just addressed the issue with the Home Secretary, but he talked about fighting crime. I would hope that as we look forward, he would welcome the news today that there are over 15,000 new police officers on our street.
So there you go. Starmer initially saying, you know, this is an iconic moment. We've got the first ever British Asian Prime Minister. Welcome. This is a day to be noted and celebrated. But have officials within the Home Office raised concerns about her being back? And that was a question that Sunak really avoided, frankly. As you heard, he sort of said, look, I've already talked about this enough. So I think her name, Suella Braverman's name, will continue to be a point of contention between the Conservative and the opposition parties. And frankly, it doesn't just extend to opposition parties where Braverman is a Marmite figure. Let's put it like that. She is very much on the right wing of the Conservative Party. Her views on immigration, which is a huge kind of element of the Home Secretary's job, are severe, particularly when she talks about this issue of people crossing over in small boats and what should be done about people who risk their lives on a basically daily or weekly basis to try and come here. She said, and it's now a very viral quote, she said that it would be her dream, her quote, dream, to see these people put on a plane to Rwanda. Have a listen to this.
Small boats, that really annoys our readers, members here, I'm sure. Why can't you stop the small boats coming?
It's a deeply entrenched and complex problem. That's a simple answer. And I would love to be here saying, well, claiming victory. I would love to be having a front page of the Telegraph with a plane taking off to Rwanda. That's my dream. That's my dream. It's
when
my
will
obsession.
That happen?
When will it happen? Listen, you've got to ask the courts.
So there you go. Suella Braverman talking about her dream to put, you know, people who quote unquote illegally come here on small boats, put them on a plane to Rwanda. I've done a whole podcast episode, by the way, on the Rwanda immigration policy. It was back when it was being explored under Priti Patel. Braverman is very much carrying on and championing that concept, that policy. So it was so controversial, it deserved its own episode. I explored it fully. You can have a little listen to that. But that is the direction that we are going under Suella Braverman as Home Secretary. Okay, let's talk about other appointments. To be honest, quite a few people have stayed put. James Cleverly, he stays on as Foreign Secretary. Ben Wallace stays on as Defence. Kemi Badenoch in International Trade. And then Penny Mordaunt, actually, obviously she kind of put her hat in the ring against Rishi Sunak and then dropped out. She kept her role as leader of the House of Commons. Bit of a surprise for some people. I think they were thinking, oh, I thought Penny Mordaunt would get a bigger job because she stepped aside and said, do you know what, Rishi, you have it. I think some people were thinking, I wondered if Rishi Sunak would give her like a headline role, but no. And then there's a few people that stayed put in the cabinet, but like shuffled around jobs-wise. So Therese Coffey and Nadhim Sahawi, they've moved roles. And then Grant Shapps, you might remember his name because he popped up quite a lot on the podcast. He used to be the Transport Secretary under Boris Johnson. He was in the Home Office for 6 days, and then he took over as Business Secretary from Jacob Rees-Mogg. So it's been like jumpy, jumpy, jumpy for quite a few of these Tory ministers. And then another key thing on top of the like hopping around has been that a fair few people had roles under Boris Johnson, didn't have any roles under Liz Truss, and now they're back. It's as if Rishi Sunak's gone, do you remember your old role from under Boris Johnson? It was only a few weeks ago. Do you want it back? Cool, here it is. So Dominic Raab, he was Deputy PM and Justice Secretary under Boris Johnson, and he is now Deputy Prime Minister and Justice Secretary again. Same for Michael Gove. He's returned to his previous role, leading on levelling up. If you don't know what levelling up is, it's kind of politics jargon. It's the term that the Conservatives are using for, well, now everyone's using it, to be honest, for equalising the United Kingdom in terms of geography. So like, if you're from the north, you should have the same opportunities, you should have a busy high street, you should have a working transport system. You know, it shouldn't all just be about London and the most affluent areas in like the southeast. That's the concept of levelling up. There's debates about how much progress has been made with it, but it's even got its own job on the cabinet and Michael Gove runs it. Steve Barclay, back as health secretary. That's a job that he had for a few months after Sajid Javid resigned until Liz Truss reshuffled him out. So there's like a few differences, but lots of familiar faces, particularly from Boris Johnson's cabinet. And I think the thing to take away from it is that Rishi Sunak is, you know how he was talking about this unity thing, like we need the Conservative Party to be united or we die. If you look at that cabinet lineup, there's Liz Truss allies, there's, I mean, Penny Mordaunt, there's Boris Johnson allies, there's diehard Rishi Sunak people. Like, there's a collection of different factions within the party that have had to come together. And I think Sunak is trying to say, look at how diverse this is. I'm trying to cover all my bases. We are going to get back to being, or we're going to aim to be, one party with one goal. So let's see how well he does with uniting the party. Only time will tell. But I think that there is some determination within the party itself. Because I think most people within the Conservatives realise, like, we can't carry on like this because we'll tear ourselves apart. Okay, such a hefty episode. I did tell you it would be, but hopefully you feel nice and across it, at least for the time being. But I've said it at the start, I'll say it again. This is somewhat unusual. In fact, it's unbelievable. If you've got a child who isn't even one, right, there's a good chance that that child will have seen two monarchs, four chancellors of the exchequer, three home secretaries, and three prime ministers. We've had three prime ministers this year so far, and there's still over 2 months of it left, so I've stopped predicting anything. Who knows where we'll be by Christmas? This is our fifth prime minister in 6 years. The last time that a Conservative Party prime minister got through from one election cycle to another was David Cameron. That's the last person who survived one election cycle and made it to another for a full tenure. Absolutely mental. Let's see what happens next. Labour are still absolutely ahead in the polls. Rishi Sunak's kind of at the helm. Who knows what's going to happen? I wonder when we will next see a general election. Rishi Sunak has made it quite clear that it's not in his interest in the near future. Instead, his interest has been all around the economy, or the quote-unquote profound economic crisis that this country is facing, as he worded it. Okay, so let me know what your thoughts are. How do you feel about Rishi Sunak? Are you excited? Are you numb by it all? Are you disappointed? Do you think it's time for a general election? Do you believe that he has a mandate? And do you think, well, yeah, process is process. We didn't vote for a person, we voted for a party. And he is the leader of that party, so let's go for it. Or are you like, okay, this is too much. I think it's time for us to have our say. Let me know at Bare Naked Politics on Instagram, or you can message me directly at JuliaBell_X. There's one thing that I want to mention before I let you go, and I feel really sad that I even have to mention it, but just in case it helps somebody, if you are facing particularly hard times and you're worried about feeding yourself, feeding your family, as we head into what is going to be quite a tough winter. If you're living in the UK and you live near a Morrison's supermarket with a Morrison's cafe, you can go to the front and ask for Henry. Then what they've done is they've partnered with Heinz and they will give you a free jacket potato and beans, Heinz beans. So it's this initiative they're doing to try to, you know, help people who are struggling with the cost of living crisis. Head up to a Morrison's cafe, ask for Henry, and you can get yourself a free meal. That's going on between the 26th of October and the 6th of November. I get absolutely nothing from telling you this. This is not in any way a partnership. I just think it's such an important thing, and it may well help you if you're in need. I hope to God that no one's in that position, but if we are, there's no shame in it. Go up, and it's a discreet way of getting yourself a meal. Thank you for listening, and thank you for being loyal. You know, if you keep on tuning in, I really do appreciate your support and your loyalty, because it is hard to keep this podcast going when I'm grappling with a lot of stuff in my own life, but I hope that it continues to be helpful. If it does, I do have to fund it, and I have to, of course, fund having a team. Please do become a patron. The link to become a patron is in the episode description. It's literally the price of a cup of tea, and it means that I can continue to keep it going on top of all the plates that I'm spinning. So I really appreciate if you can take the time to do that. Of course, make sure you subscribed or clicked follow if you're listening on Spotify. And with that, I will leave you to get on with your life. Make the rest of your day not about politics. Feel free to do that. Have a bath, have a wine, go for a walk, do something nice, because these are quite tough times that we're living in. All right, I'm sending extreme love. These are weird times, they're chaotic times. I'm here to help. If you've got questions, you know where to find me on Instagram. All right, I'll speak to you in the next one.